Lest We Forget, Volume 7, Number 2. Stephen Nelson Haskell was a pioneer of our movement that had his hand in the development of many institutions, including what eventually became the Adventist Book Centers and Atlantic Union College. In addition, he participated in the first European camp meeting in Norway and led the first group of missionaries to Australia and New Zealand. We begin this issue with an excerpt taken from Arthur Spalding's book, Captain of the Hosts, entitled Adventist Book Centers Begin. Then we'll hear an article written by Haskell entitled South Lancaster Academy. Next, we will hear our biographical portion by Marlene Steinweg entitled Stephen N. Haskell, A Pioneer in Missionary Promotion at Home and Abroad. We'll conclude with an article by Haskell entitled God's Bill of Fare, How the Last Work of the Gospel is to Restore Every Lost Truth. We begin this issue with Adventist Book Centers Begin by A.W. Spalding. In the little town of South Lancaster, Massachusetts, in the middle 1860s, a group of earnest Christian women led by Mary L. Priest devoted themselves to good works, visiting and praying with the sick, ministering with their hands to the needy, telling of the blessed hope, and distributing tracts. Young Stephen N. Haskell, director of the Southern New England Mission Field, beheld this service of the diligent sisters and envisioned a church-wide work of the same character. He therefore encouraged the group to extend their work by correspondence and the mailing of literature to a much wider field. In 1869, the group organized itself as the Vigilant Missionary Society, with Mrs. Roxy Rice, president, Mrs. Mary H. Haskell, vice president, Mrs. Mary L. Priest, secretary, and Rhoda Wheeler, treasurer. Every Wednesday afternoon at 3 o'clock, these women met to pray and talk over plans for Christian work, and not merely to lay plans, but to execute them. Their practical ministry never ceased, but their emphasis came more and more to rest on the wider distribution of literature. Haskell soon extended the organization to the whole conference, changing the name to the Tract and Missionary Society, forming the conference into districts, providing each district with a director, and arranging for regular inspection and reporting. It became a typically Haskell organization, close-knit and efficient. Elder White urged other conferences to follow the lead. This was widely done and opened the way for the General Conference of 1874 to form the General Tract Society and to invite Elder Haskell to travel in all the conferences, promoting and organizing. The work spread and grew until every conference had its tract society, reaching from headquarters down to the last individual church, setting men and women at work in the home field and with correspondence reaching to the ends of the earth. In 1882, the work of the General Tract Society having reached beyond national borders, the name was changed to the International Tract Society. Thus began the distribution of small literature. The organization was to develop into a widespread agency for the handling of all our publications, including a list of large and more expensive books. The tract societies, proving themselves convenient depots and business agencies for the handling of all the printed output, were in effect made branch offices of the publishing houses. And in time, the inadequacy of their title becoming apparent, it was changed, 1924, from tract societies to book and Bible houses. Today, these are well-known ABCs or Adventist Book Centers. Now we will hear a report by S. N. Haskell on one of the many educational institutions he helped to found. Later, Atlantic Union College grew out of this institution. This report is entitled South Lancaster Academy. It is nearly 2 years since the school was started here in Lancaster. Realizing how near we are to the time of trouble, it was thought that a school should be established especially for the benefit of those who could not have the advantages of the college at Battle Creek. The favorable results of the first year encouraged our brethren to go forward. Consequently, at a general meeting here in Lancaster about 1 year since, a resolution was passed authorizing the school committee to proceed to erect such buildings as would be suitable for the school. But owing to circumstances, nothing was done in this direction until this winter. At the general meeting held at Lancaster in December, it was voted to proceed at once to raise $25,000 to purchase land and erect buildings. Over half this sum was pledged at that meeting, and in less than 1 week afterward, 26 acres of desirable land were purchased in the village of South Lancaster for cultivation and a building site. Believing it would be for the interest of the students to have manual labor connected with the school, and that this labor should be directed in useful trades, it has been arranged to connect with the school at least 6 trades. 4 are already in active operation, and it is hoped that before the spring term closes, there will be classes in the others, besides gardening and general housework. As we look back over the past 2 years, we can truthfully say that God has dealt with us in great mercy and has given us largely of His Holy Spirit. Quite a large number have been converted and baptized. There are also at least 12 active laborers in the cause today in different conferences, a number of whom came to the school without any idea of engaging in the work of God. For these things, we thank God and take courage. It should be understood that this is not a rival school with any other college of Seventh-day Adventists in America. There should be in this country 10 Seventh-day Adventist schools where there is now one. There are not only hundreds of young men and women, but there are also many of more mature years who, by a few weeks or months of instruction in language, letter writing, general missionary work, and how to conduct Bible readings, would be qualified to become efficient laborers in the cause of God, while others who have been in the field can better qualify themselves for usefulness by this course of instruction. It has been our aim, and God has seemed to signally bless the effort, to have such a school as will contribute to the advancement of the truths which we believe are applicable to the present time. Included with this report, we will give a brief history of South Lancaster Academy, taken from the Seventh-day Adventist Encyclopedia. On April 19, 1882, the New England School, yet unnamed, opened its doors. 19 students started classes, and 5 more joined these a few days later. S.N. Haskell was the founder and builder of the school. Goodloe H. Bell was the first principal. In 1883, the school was named South Lancaster Academy. In 1885, the school expanded to include college preparatory. Teacher training was added in 1886, with development of a normal school, J.T. Browning Missionary and Industrial School. In 1918, the school name was changed to Lancaster Junior College, but in 1922, when Atlantic Union College began to operate on the senior college level, South Lancaster Academy was again recognized as a separate organization. And now we turn our attention to the biographical sketch by Marlene Steinweg entitled Stephen N. Haskell, A Pioneer in Missionary Promotion at Home and Abroad. "Promise me," the dying man begged. "Promise me you'll take care of Mary when I'm gone. She's so helpless, and she'll be all alone in the world." 17-year-old Stephen Nelson Haskell listened to the old man's plea. Mature beyond his years, Haskell solemnly promised to care for Mary, the daughter of the old man, his friend, Farmer Howe. Mary Howe was extremely ill and suffered from partial paralysis. Haskell worked for her father, who was now dying. When Farmer Howe died, he left his farm in Haskell's care, partially to fulfill his promise to the dying man, but mostly because he cared deeply for her. Stephen asked Mary to become his wife. The year was 1850. Mary was 20 years older than Stephen. They would share nearly 45 fulfilling, though childless, years before Mary would pass away to her rest. This youth had learned to move forward when God opened a doorway of opportunity or duty to him. Little did he realize that in his future, God would open many doors to him, which would lead him to faraway countries like India, China, Japan, New Zealand, Africa, and Switzerland. He would become a leader of leaders, an esteemed evangelist, an outstanding administrator, and a pioneer in missionary promotion at home and abroad. He would learn, believe, and follow the third angel's message with all his heart and soul as Christ's last message to men. And the one business of Seventh-day Adventists, to his mind, would be to give this message to the world. S. N. Haskell was born the 22nd of April, 1833, in the little town of Oakham, Massachusetts. Haskell's parents were members of the Congregational Church. At the tender age of 8, young Stephen signed a temperance pledge, and after his conversion at age 15 in 1848, he joined his parents' church. Haskell learned soap making as a trade and also hired out to Farmer Howe to help maintain his farm. In 1852, about 2 years after his marriage to Mary Howe, Haskell heard his first Advent sermon, which deeply interested him. He talked of that sermon to everyone he met, and was presently asked by a neighbor why he himself did not preach. Haskell was at first unsure, and preached his first sermon under great embarrassment. From that time on, he combined part-time Advent preaching with selling the soap he manufactured. In 1853, the Review began to publish a little tract entitled simply, Elihu on the Sabbath. This tract was to play a large role in making Stephen N. Haskell a Sabbath-keeping Adventist. While traveling to Canada to visit a group of Adventist believers, Haskell changed trains in Springfield, Massachusetts. He thought it would help if he could store his trunk there and travel lighter. William Saxby, who had a shop near the railroad, kindly offered to store Haskell's trunk. By tactful home missionary work, Saxby sowed the seeds of Sabbath truth in the visitor's somewhat stubborn heart. Saxby gave Haskell a copy of the little tract, Elihu on the Sabbath, which convinced him of the Sabbath truth. Brother Haskell decided, on his knees in a Canadian forest, that he would follow the Bible and obey the Sabbath commandment. He attended an Advent conference in Worcester, Massachusetts, in the summer of 1854, fully persuaded that he could convince every member that it was his duty to keep the seventh day. However, his friends would not even listen to him. One exception to the general reaction of the First Day Advents, who held this conference, gave him courage. Thomas Hale of Huberston, Massachusetts, invited the young Sabbath keeper home with him, and in a short time he and his family, another family of four members, and certain others, began the observance of the Sabbath. Sometime later, Joseph Bates suddenly appeared at Haskell's door, announcing himself as a friend of William Saxby. Before Bates left, the Haskells had accepted all the doctrines the captain had presented and sent along with him an order for every tract and paper published by the Review. Stephen Haskell was 21 years old. His wife Mary was 41. From this time on, they dedicated their lives to advancing this newly beloved, life-changing message. Haskell had a burden to distribute Seventh-day Adventist publications everywhere. Because of this, he helped inaugurate the first regular church tract and missionary society plan in 1869. This is perhaps the accomplishment for which Stephen N. Haskell is best known because of its far-reaching results. He also believed women should be included in spreading the gospel. One way he encouraged women was through their active participation in the tract societies that were organized all over North America. In 1870, Brother Haskell promoted the purchase of a tent for evangelism. That summer, he and a friend, P.C. Rodman of Rhode Island, purchased a 50-foot tent and pitched it on the ground of the First New England Camp Meeting near South Lancaster, Massachusetts. Haskell invented a special tent stake removing tool that is in use today and is still called the Haskell. At the camp meeting, the four states, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and Connecticut, were organized into one conference. Haskell was ordained and, much to his surprise, elected president of the newly formed conference. His organizational and administrative talents developed further in his new position. Elder White visited Haskell's field in November 1871 and observed, "Under the well-directed efforts of Brother Haskell, our people are in advance of those in any other part of the field in systematic, energetic action for the advancement of the cause of truth." He further suggested that Elder Haskell be sent to another field like New York or Michigan or even the Western Conference to give others the benefits of his financial talents. Three times Haskell was president of the California Conference, once from 1879 to 1887 in absentia. Haskell also traveled to many countries. Mary, whose health had greatly improved, waited at home, praying for his safety and success. One of the first places he visited was England in 1882, where he reported that God's providence had opened the way for distribution of publications to passengers on ships to London and for shipment of tracts to other parts of the world. From England, he toured Switzerland and France, where he visited a very feeble J.N. Andrews. He commended the success of the work among the French made possible by Andrews' publications and sought to inspire other workers to do the same for the Italians. In 1885, Haskell traveled to Australia by way of New Zealand. While in New Zealand, Haskell prayed aloud behind closed doors in the room he rented in the home of the Hare family. Brother Hare eavesdropped as Haskell prayed for him and his family. He and many other members of his family accepted the present truth. By August, Haskell was in Australia, where he suggested that the church establish a mission in Sydney to distribute literature to islands around the world. Haskell traveled to Norway in 1887, where he attended the first camp meeting and first European Council. Reporting to review readers, he recommended a two-way exchange of workers. His vision was that American laborers be sent to Europe and Europeans' converts be sent to America for training. Returning to America through England, Haskell learned that in London the work was expanding rapidly. Steps had been taken to secure a publishing house at 451 Holloway Road and a building for training laborers. Haskell was involved in the development of Seventh-day Adventist education at schools like Battle Creek College, which later moved and is now Andrews University, Nashville Agricultural and Normal Institute, later Madison College, Healdsburg College, later moved and is now Pacific Union College, South Lancaster Academy, which later became Atlantic Union College, and Avondale College, originally Avondale School for Christian Workers. Haskell had a burning desire to reach more countries for Christ. He took an extensive trip during 1889 to 1890 to Western Europe, South Africa, India, China, Japan, and Australia. Some 28 years later, he related that on that world tour he baptized one individual in China and another in Japan, the first SDA converts in these countries. He was again president of the California Conference from 1891 to 1894. His first wife died in January of that year, 1894. He was 61 years old and by no means ready to retire. In fact, in just 2 years, in 1896, he was on the move again to Australia, where he helped establish the new school at Avondale. He remained single for about 3 years, but feeling the need of a helpmeet, he wrote to an old friend, Hetty Hurd, and asked her to come to Australia and marry him, which she agreed to do. They married in 1897 and honeymooned in a tent on the new campus. Hetty and Stephen Haskell were blessed with 22 years together, listening for and following God's directions in their lives. In 1903, Haskell, who captained a diverse corps of workers in the country's metropolis, New York City, set forth a plan for the comprehensive and well-articulated city campaign. It contained the following: that house-to-house literature work be conducted, opening doors for Bible studies by competent instructors, that health service and education be given through vegetarian restaurants, hydropathic treatment rooms, and lectures, that when the groundwork had been sufficiently done, there follow evangelistic meetings, that all these workers be united and, so far as feasible, resident in a central workers' school in charge of the director of the city work. This they did not only in New York, but in other cities, creating churches and building or purchasing meeting houses. Restaurants and treatment rooms were established in main cities. The bulk of the city work was literature distribution, Bible studies, and evangelistic preaching. From 1908 to 1911, beginning when Haskell was 75 years old, he and Hetty moved to California, where he was again elected president of the California Conference. Haskell was by no means a man who never made mistakes. Ellen White had to reprove him, as she did many other leaders of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, after receiving messages from God for them. Haskell was willing to listen and to allow God to work in his life. During his long, productive life, he kept but one purpose in mind: to complete the gospel commission. Haskell died in December of 1922, just under 90 years of age. Until Christ returns, Seventh-day Adventists throughout the world will continue moving forward in the same purposeful spirit of earnest labor as that of Stephen and Haskell, proclaiming the same message of faith in God and revealing the same belief in the triumph of the work of God. This is the legacy of pioneers like Stephen and Haskell. Our tribute to Elder Haskell will not be complete until the work he loved is completed. Our final article is by S. N. Haskell, entitled God's Bill of Fare. When God created the world, he also created man out of the dust of the earth in his own likeness and image. He was made a little lower than the angels and crowned with glory and honor. He was made to have dominion over the works of his hands, and God put all things under his feet. At this time he gave man the following bill of fare: Behold, I have given you every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in the which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed. To you it shall be for meat. This is God's original bill of fare for the human family. No flesh meat is in it. In Smith's original 3-volume Bible dictionary, in commenting on the word pulse from Daniel 1 verses 12 and 16, we find that it is translated from a plural noun, seroim in Hebrew, meaning seeds. Seeds denote grains of any kind, whether barley, wheat, millet, vetches, that is beans, etc. This same root is found in Genesis 1 verse 29, according to Smith. Daniel felt that anything different than pulse, the king's meat or the wine which he drank, even though it came direct from the king's table, would defile his body. In 1 Corinthians 3, verses 16 and 17, we read, "Know ye not that ye are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you? If any man defile the temple of God, him shall God destroy, for the temple of God is holy, which temple you are." These words are just as true now as they were when they were inspired by God. The question may arise, why then did God ever permit flesh meat to be eaten? The answer can be found in Matthew 19, verses 5 through 8. God suffered many things because of the hardness of the heart. It should be remembered that God does not condemn man for what he does, which he does not know to be wrong, but that which he does know to be wrong. The last work of the gospel is to restore every lost truth, either lost or permitted to be in disuse because of the hardness of the heart. This truth is clearly stated in Acts 3, verses 19 through 21. "Repent ye therefore and be converted, that your sins may be blotted out, when the times of refreshing shall come from the presence of the Lord, and he shall send Jesus Christ, which before was preached unto you, whom the heaven must receive until the times of restitution of all things, which God hath spoken by the mouth of all his holy prophets since the world began." In the time of the end, every divine institution is to be restored. That's from Prophets and Kings, page 678. This will include the original bill of fare. In Testimonies, volume 7, pages 125 and 126, we read, "God is working in behalf of his people. He does not desire them to be without resources. He is bringing them back to the diet originally given to man. Their diet is to consist of the foods made from the materials he has provided. The materials principally used in these foods will be fruits and grains and nuts, but various roots will also be used." This was written March 10, 1900. We are in the Day of Atonement or Judgment. In the balances of the sanctuary, every character is to be weighed. Quote, "God is leading out a people and establishing them upon the one great platform of truth, the commandments of God and the testimony of Jesus. He has given his people a straight chain of Bible truth, clear and connected. This truth is of heavenly origin and has been searched for as for hidden treasure. It has been dug out through careful searching of the Scriptures and through much prayer." Close quote. Testimonies, Volume 3, page 447.